a great title for the book, Any Given Saturday. So, Shay, do you now, on Any Given Saturday, do you miss the whole buzz around lining out regularly?
I think so. I think you're always going to miss that. That's the problem. It's you never can replace, you know, playing on a match day. It's a difficult one to replace, but, you know, you've got to get on with life. You've got to go to the next chapter. You know, that's a bit of a saying after writing a book, but the next chapter of your life and look forward to that. And I'm doing a lot of media work and stuff at the minute, and TV and radio and stuff. So that's going pretty well. So I'm enjoying that.
Did you find a big adjustment when you stopped playing regularly, or was it like a phase thing and it sort of crept up on you?
Well, not officially retired as such yet, but I think I've sort of been forced to retire in the sense that you know there's been a few clubs' interest, but nothing really that I fancied, if I'm being honest. You know, but it's still probably in the phase of I'm still in the period of I don't realise I've finished yet. I actually train a couple of days a week with my local team, Macclesfield, over in England. So that's keeping me sort of a little bit sane, I suppose. But you're never going to replace playing and you know, the buzz of playing in front of, I don't know, 50, 60, 70,000 people and millions watching on TV. It's very difficult to replace that, you know, that sort of, you know, that buzz. You walk across the line and, you know, that it's lights, camera, action. You've got to produce the goods and stuff, and it's difficult to replace that. But you know, I've got four kids and, you know, a happy life in a sense, and they take up a lot of your time as well. So, you know, that's a good replacement if nothing else.
You mentioned the huge crowds and crossing the line. Were nerves ever a big factor for you, or was it just the early days and after that it was another match?
I think I've been always a bit nervous, to be fair, before games, and I think that's a good thing. I think it's important that you use the nerves in a positive way, because you know if it goes the other way, and it can affect your game. Of course, obviously when you're very young, then it's more than, you know, so you're very, very nervous and stuff, and that can have an impact as well. But I think the more you play, the more experience you gain over the years, and you know, you do get a bit more relaxed with it, and it's more about just showing the people how good you are week in, week out. And you know, I always worked hard in training every single day, and I realised if I did that, then you know the match day would take care of itself. And thankfully, I've done all right over the years. You know, it's sort of stood me in good stead.
So you figured that once you were well trained, well prepared, that the match would take care of itself.
Yeah, well, I've always like trained every day in the sense that, you know, try and cover every aspect I'm going to come across on a match day, and you know, crossing, shot stopping, kicking, reflexes, all the different things that a goalkeeper needs. And I find if I do that weekend, the full week leading up to the match day, then you know, the match day in a sense is nearly like, this is your time to go and enjoy yourself, because you work so hard during the week in training, and now it's match day, and now it's time to show the people what you've done all week. You know, people just think you turn up to train for a couple of hours and you go home, but it's all finely tuned stuff, and I feel if you cover that even from a mental side of things, when I go into a match day, then I feel prepared.
Now, going back to the very early days, you started playing with Lifford Celtic when you were still at school, and you had a good run in the FAI Junior Cup back in 92, but it'll not be the Lifford Celtic days most people will be interested in. It'll be the bigger clubs and the bigger games and the players that you played with and against and the managers that you came across. Celtic, you moved to Celtic but never actually played for it, or never played in the first team for
it. Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, you always remember where you started as well, so I'll never forget Lifford and Lifford Celtic and all the lads I played with there. Of course, you say the Junior Cup was very special and got me sort of on the ladder to sort of where I ended up, I'm sure. But then obviously moving over to Glasgow Celtic was a massive thing for me, and as you know, there's a lot of Glasgow Celtic fans in Donegal, so it's a huge attachment to the county, and of course with Paddy Bonner being there and stuff as well. Liam Brady was the manager when I signed. There's a huge Irish connection, and you know, it was a fantastic move for me personally, and I love being a Celtic, you know, a Celtic supporter still. And I was on the bench for an Old Firm game once, and you talk about nerves before, I was a nervous wreck. Paddy played, thankfully, but you know, big nerves as a 17-year-old being on the bench for an Old Firm game. So, but it was just the first step onto, you know, my professional career as a player and stuff. And yeah, very special to go to Glasgow Celtic.
You touch on that in the book, heading down to the match and the size of the crowd and the volume of the noise.
Yeah.
I mean, Old Firm matches are quite unique. But your stay at Celtic didn't end too well when Lou McCarry offered you a contract on the back of an envelope.
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, it's when you think of Celtic and the size of the club, I mean, it's all changed a lot now, to be honest. It's moved on a lot since I was there, of course, and it moved on for the better. But yeah, I mean, I was offered a contract at the time, it's in the book, of course, and I think I was going to end up, unless what I was as an apprentice, to sign professional terms, you know. And you know, myself and my dad made a big decision that, you know, this is unacceptable, and we were going to go back actually to Ireland and see what my options were. And that's what I did. I went back to Donegal and sort of waited my time out. And, of course, Blackburn came along after that. But, you know, I would have loved to have stayed at Celtic at the time, but we just felt it was a bit of a slap in the face, if I'm being honest, from the manager. I don't think it was from the football club as such, but just the manager, the way he treated all the young players. It was like, you sign this or you can leave. And it was like, well, we're not signing that. So, you know, we left, and that was sort of the bottom line.
You write very poignantly about your mum, who you lost at an early age, and your dad features a lot in the book as well, and was very influential, especially in the early years when you would have needed that extra advice, and advised you about what to do at Celtic, and it's been good advice down through the years.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the first chapter is about my mum, and it's very emotional, actually. My dad actually opened up to Chris, who helped me write the book, and you know, it was quite emotional even reading it back himself. You know, about my mum when she died, well, I was only 4 at the time and stuff, so it's very difficult to remember everything. But my dad obviously has got a very good memory, and he was even telling me stuff recently that I didn't even know myself, you know. So going back through all that was quite an emotional journey as well. And you can talk now, but it gets emotional, actually. But yeah, it was tough growing up with no mum, I suppose, and you know, we've all, just as we all had to grow up without her and stuff, and it was difficult, and probably still difficult today.
So in a way, your dad had to do both roles, and his advice as to what to do in your career, because sometimes you can be your judgment can be a bit clouded, and you just want to play football when you're young.
Yeah, of course. My dad was kind of my agent as well at the time, you know, whatever you want to call an agent or my dad. But what you do know about my dad, he had my best interest at heart, and he always wanted the best for me, of course, and that was, you know, every dad's the same, I'm sure. And he was a great role model. My dad used to be a goalkeeper as well, and people around Donegal would know him. He played for White Strand and the likes. Used to go and watch him every Sunday and stuff. But, you know, he was someone who, you know, he left home in Donegal to go and play first team football. And, you know, we wanted to play football. As soon as I went over there, he wanted me to play first team football. I know that wouldn't happen at 16, but, you know, I made my debut, I think, at 18, league debut, and I made my international debut at 19. And that was my dad pushing me hard, you know, pushing me all the time. And it was fantastic to have him behind me.
Well, he gave you good advice at the time after you left Celtic, because your head was a bit turned when Alex Ferguson rang up and invited you over to Manchester United. But as he said, well, Peter Schmeichel is first choice at United, and, yeah, you know, he hasn't even reached his peak yet. So
yeah. Well, that was actually before. That was before I went to Celtic. But I could have went to United or Celtic at the time. And,
okay.
And you're right. My dad said, you know, you're going to go to Manchester United and sit behind Peter Schmeichel for 5 or 6 years. Like, and as I said before, he didn't want that. He wanted me playing as soon as I got off the boat, basically, you know. So it was all about the avenue, the path, whatever you want to call it, to get to the first team as quick as we could. I know, no disrespect to Packy, but he was in his 30s and stuff, and mid-30s maybe at the time. And, you know, there was a window there. We thought he's not going to go on forever, of course. And there would be an opportunity sooner at Celtic than at Manchester United. And, you know, he guided me to that decision, of course. And obviously Manchester United is a great club as well, a massive club as well. So it was a big decision.
Staying with your club career, you went off into Blackburn Rovers, and they were managed by Kenny Dalglish, who you had a lot of respect for.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, amazing guy, amazing person. And, you know, what a legend of a, you know, a footballer and a man as well. You know, what a great guy. And, yeah, he brought me to Blackburn, of course. I had 3 years with him there. And then brought me to Newcastle United at 21. You know, he put me straight in the first team as a 21-year-old goalkeeper. And that doesn't happen too often nowadays as well. You think of it, the goalkeepers now, they're normally mid-20s at least before they get a chance. And I was playing week in, week out in the Premier League. And Kenny Dalglish was a huge influence behind that. And the confidence and the belief he gave me as a goalkeeper was phenomenal.
Now, you didn't play under him very long at Newcastle before he left, and it was a different sort of a man entirely then who took over, and you didn't have as good a relationship with Ruud Gullit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the problem, is when a different manager comes in or a new manager comes in, they have different ideas. And, you know, that he didn't, if we didn't get on great, if I'm being honest, you know, I didn't really follow anybody in my life or my career. But, you know, I got dropped for an FA Cup final once, and that was a tough one to take, because I played all the rounds up to the semi-final. I was, you know, played for one of the best games for Newcastle, and then didn't play the final. So it was a real kick in the teeth, if I'm being honest. And he didn't even tell me himself. He wasn't man enough to even tell me. He got the goalkeeping coach to tell me. Just little things like that you remember. And, you know, you just wish that he could be more manly about it and sort of said to me face. And the reason he told the goalkeeping coach I wasn't playing was because I had a problem with me kicking or something, my goal kicks or something. It was something, nothing to do with keeping the ball in the net. But it was even more harder to get my head around. But yeah, it wasn't ideal. I mean, you're not going to get on with everybody in life, I suppose, but I just felt that it was, you know, a difficult one to take at the time.
Now, you mentioned they've been dropped for that FA Cup final, but two FA Cup finals feature largely in the book, and, you know, you look back fondly on them, or look back, reminisce on them at the very least.
Yeah, of course you do. I mean, even growing up in Ireland and Donegal and just diving around the front garden, FA Cup final used to be like, you watch the TV from 11 o'clock till all day, watch the guys wearing their suits, and you watch the game, and you're out in the garden at the front with my brothers, diving around, pretending you're at Wembley and stuff, you know, so... To go from in the front garden in Lifford to actually being at Wembley is a phenomenal sort of, if you think about it, if you sort of take a step back and think of where you've come from and you know, we used to commentate in the front garden about, oh, there's a great save, you know, Wembley and all this kind of stuff, and then I'm actually walking out of Wembley playing the FA Cup finals. It's,
well, it's very special. We did that as well, Shay, but I never got to play in a final.
I never thought, to be honest, in Lifford at the time that I was ever going to play in a final either, you know, but...
The build-up, I remember the build-up used to be every bit as exciting almost as the game itself. As you say, seeing the fellas in all the suits and them on the coach, and this was big stuff at the time.
Yeah, madness, and the FA Cup song and the fans, you can imagine, you know, wearing the colours for the week leading up to it. And, you know, it's such a big occasion, and I was part of, you know, a few FA Cup finals. It was obviously a couple at Newcastle and Aston Villa and Man City. I was lucky enough to be, I think, maybe it was at four or five in the end, finals. Right. You know, it was to go out to Wembley, the old Wembley and the new Wembley, played both. It was very, very special.
Now, you went through a lot of Newcastle went through a lot of managers over
the
years.
It's all my fault, I think.
No, I don't want to hold you personally responsible. But there was, to name some of them, Bobby Robson, Graham Souness, Sam Allardyce, Kevin Keegan. It was never dull at Newcastle, was it?
Yeah, I mean, I talk about it in the book, of course, about, you know, there was a little bit of a soap opera at times, you know, there was a revolving door when it came to managers. And I think about Newcastle, it's a great club, such a big club, and the expectations are so high. So if you're doing well, everyone thinks you're going to win the league. And if you have a couple of bad results, you think you're getting relegated. There's no middle ground, you know. And it's you know, if I'm being honest, it's a great club to play at. The atmosphere up there at St. James's Park is a phenomenal atmosphere. And, you know, it's a very special place to play football. And I was there for nearly 12 years in my life and, you know, enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah, and so much of the book is taken up with your time at Newcastle, which is understandable when you had 12 years there. After that, then, just zipping through your career, Manchester City, and I get the feeling that kind of football was changing then around the time that you'd moved to Manchester City, and the transfer fees were astronomical, and just the attitude of the players maybe, and things in the dressing room were changing. Did you notice that at the time?
Well, obviously the fees were going up. Of course, I went and joined Man City. Sheikh Mansour took over the club, and Khaldun Al-Makbarak were very big influence on me joining the club. And, you know, they've got a thing of Man City. They wanted to be one of the biggest clubs in the world, and that's not an easy thing to do. You know, when you think of it, like some Manchester United, Liverpool, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and they believe that Manchester City one day will be as big as them, and I think it will be, because they've got New York City, Shanghai City, Melbourne City. They're covering the whole world, you know, and it's fantastic what they're doing. And the good thing about the, you know, the people from Abu Dhabi is they're not in for the short haul. You know, you see some owners going in and buying it for a year or two, spinning it, and even look at Newcastle. Mike Ashley's gone in there for maybe 10 years now, but he's trying to sell it. He's probably been trying to sell it for the last 5 years, but these people are there for the long haul, and what they've done at Manchester City is phenomenal. And, you know, it's, as you say, the transfer fees and the money nowadays is even, you know, even in the last year or two, it's gone crazy. You know, it's hard to imagine, you know, where it's all gone and where it's going to finish, of course. But, you know, people at Man City have got a huge vision of where they want the club to go, and I think they'll get there because they've got obviously a lot of wealth behind them as well.
You also had spells at Villa, to Middlesbrough, at Stoke City, and over the years you played with some great players: Alan Shearer, Patrick Vieira, Dietmar Hamann, Kipper Lynch.
I know.
It's a long list.
That is a long list.
That's only a few of them.
I know, it's amazing. I mean, even you mentioned the managers before. I mentioned Robbie White in the book, actually, who's my Lifford Celtic manager, you know. And that's where it all started, of course. And the lads, you say, Kipper Lynch and Flappy French and Cooper. I know it's like a bit crazy, and all these people from Lifford, they don't actually have normal names. They all have nicknames, you know. Burnsy, Wooly, Crazy, all my friends from growing up, you know. But that's where it all started, and you'll always remember them special days, even at Lifford. And, you know, as you say, some of them you move on in your career, and to be playing with the likes of Alan Shearer and Patrick Vieira is kind of amazing, because they're on my phone, they text me, you know, we're still good friends and stuff. And I don't mean that in the show big time way, or me showing off my friends or Patrick Vieira and Alan Shearer, but they genuinely are my friends. And it's like, it's mad to think that someone from Lifford could have a friend sort of like Alan Shearer or Patrick Vieira. It's just, you know, it's even hard for me to comprehend, but they're just one of the lads that are sort of similar age to myself, and, you know, they're friends, and they're friends for life. And it's, you know, that's the special thing about football. I've been around the world with football, and, you know, I met all these amazing people, and they're still friends now today.
Another friend that you made in football was Gary Speed, and his his loss affected you deeply, and you write very movingly about him in the book.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Speedo, I don't know what to say. It's an all emotional one, of course, and you know what happened, we'll never know. We'll never get to the bottom of it, of course. You know, while he did what he did, and left these two wonderful boys behind him, and you know, it's very hard to comprehend. It's very hard to talk about, even. And you know, he should be still texting me now, like with Alan and Patrick. He should be texting me every day, like he did before, and you know, having the crack and sending jokes, and just one of the lads, of course. And it's a very emotional thing that he's not here anymore, of course, and he's just a couple of years older than me, and you know, it's a big loss to everyone.
You're the second most capped Republic of Ireland player, Shay, after Robbie Keane, and that's with 134 caps. You played for Ireland for 20 years. Now, having watched Ireland in, say, the Euros in 88 and Italia in 90, it must have been an incredible feeling to be togging out, pulling on an Ireland jersey with, as you say in the book, Roy Keane on one side and Paul McGrath on the other.
Yeah, and it's hard to believe, to be honest. It's, you know, with dreams coming true and all that, and that was a dream. You know, it was a dream, as we all say. I love that dream to come true, whatever you dream you have in life. But, you know, I used to go up and get the autographs of the Irish team and sort of at the hotel, and just even see them and to see the real people. It's amazing as a kid when you grow up and think, you know, now I'm actually playing, I'm in the team, and there's young kids coming up to me thinking, oh, they're Shay Given, and it's, you know, it's a bit surreal, and I never forget them moments as a kid growing up and you know, meeting the first team players, and always try and give even kids nowadays, you know, as much time as I can, of course, to give autographs and pictures and stuff, because it's memories I have forever. And you know, for me to pull on that Irish jersey is just such a proud thing, and for my family as well, and for someone, you know, even from Lifford and Donegal, for someone to represent the county, of course, is very, very special.
Well, you played in the World Cup in 2002, and there was a famous Mick and Roy fallout, and a lot of people will be eager to see what you have to say about that in the book. And you don't hold back.
No, I mean, I'm just told I've not made anything up in the book. The book is what it is. It's my life. It's what's happened at the time and stuff. And I don't like, you know, maybe some people might think, oh, you've just mentioned Roy because he's such a, you know, a big name and all, but not really. I mean, they want to talk about it because in Saipan, it's a World Cup finals. It's the biggest sort of thing that I'm ever going to play in my life for my country, so that's a talking point, of course it is. And what happened beforehand is, you know, we can't change, and I've not made anything up in the story. There's maybe a few swear words in the story and stuff, but that's what happened at the time, and I just wanted to, you know, give my sort of version of events or whatever you want to call it. And I think I've been honest, and I've not made anything up, you know, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, you mentioned swear words there. There's quite a few of them dotted around the book, but then that's the language of football all too often. So there's no point in trying to sugarcoat it.
There's not. I mean, industrial language, you would call it what you want, but you know, that's what happens in football and sometimes in life, of course, and especially in training and stuff, and in match days and games and situations, people have fallouts like anything else in any other workplace, of course, you know, and it can get a bit get heated, you know, and heated conversations and heated language or whatever you want to call it, of course. And you know, sometimes it just comes out in the heat of the moment, of course.
Two questions to finish with, and I don't know if you'd be able to answer them. The first is,
I'll try.
through your career, playing with all the clubs in the Premier League and in the Champions League, and playing international football, who's the best player you ever played against and with?
It's a tricky one. I don't have this argument with my son, actually. He's a Ronaldo fan, and I'm a Messi fan. So, you know, to play, I've actually played against both of them. So it's a bit of a toss-up. People listening will probably think Ronaldo, people think Messi, but I'm going to go for Messi. And my son's in the background here. He's shaking his head, actually, at this second. But, I mean, even to even mention them two players, I think, you know, in 20, 30 years, we'll be looking back like the probably like Maradona or Pele. These two guys are phenomenal players, and to play against them was phenomenal, frightening, unbelievable players. So I'll go Messi, my son saying Ronaldo, but, you know, you could pick either one of them. What's the best player I've played with? It's very difficult, that one, because I've been lucky to play with some great players. You mentioned yourself before, Patrick Vieira, you know, Roy Keane, Alan Shearer, I don't know, Tevez, David Silva, Vincent Kompany. I mean, the list is pretty endless, if I'm being honest. So I think it'd be unfair to pick one of them guys out, but I've been very lucky to play with so many great players. I mean, Paul McGrath, I mentioned him as well in the book, you know, what a legend he is. And to play with him as well was very, very special. Richard Dunn, Robbie Keane, Damien Duff. I mean, the list is endless. So I don't know. I can't really name one.
I know it's a hard question. I understand. Yeah. It's not, in a way, it's not a fair question at all. But
no.
I wanted to ask it. And finally, managers. There's been so many managers over the years, international and club. And if you had to pick one out.
It's a difficult one. I'd probably go with Kenny Dalglish. And the reason that being, he brought me to Blackburn as an 18-year-old, and he brought me to Newcastle, as I said to you before, you know, and gave me the opportunity, my first real chance in the Premier League. And he backed me. Obviously, probably wasn't playing, stealing the whole thing when I made a mistake or something. He was the one to get his arm around me and say, you know, never get too down on yourself. And the opposite, if you have a great game as well, don't get too carried away with yourself. It's about keeping a level head no matter what happens. And he was a great influence on my career, definitely.
The book is called Any Given Saturday, Shea Given, Your Life in Football. And you're going to be signing copies of it this coming Saturday. And Sunday, I should say, Sunday the 22nd. And this is in Easton's, here in the Courtyard Shopping Centre in Letterkenny. Shea, we could chat for an hour or more. And I'm thankful to you for just taking some time out.
No, I mean, I'm glad I'm going there in Letterkenny as well on Sunday, of course, and hopefully meet a lot of people, come along and get the book signed. And it's just special to go back to Donegal and see everyone again. And it's just a bit surreal that my book's now in a shop in Donegal. And I remember teachers in Columbus College once saying, you know, because I missed some days in school playing football and stuff. She said, you need to get your head right. You never do anything. And she wasn't saying it in a bad way. She was just trying to say it to get me to study more and stuff, you know. And it's a bit surreal now that I'm going to go to a bookshop and even Letterkenny and see my book on the shelf, you know. And hopefully loads of people come down and see me and get the book signed. And that'd be very special for me as well.
Okay then, Shea, thanks once again for taking time out. The best luck with the book signing and indeed the book. And it's an absolute fantastic read. Shea Given, thank you.
I appreciate that. Thanks a million.